I call this meeting of the House Ways and Means Committee to order and note for the record that a quorum is present. So happy Monday morning to everybody that is here, and I appreciate those that were on time today, so thank you. And I'm not scolding people, but I am kind of scolding people. It just prolongs the day if we can't start this on time. So anyway, but I'm glad for everybody that is here. So welcome to another busy week of the Ways and Means Committee meeting. And so our goal is to get through our agenda today before we have floor session so that we don't have to come back, and hopefully we'll be able to do that. And we're actually going to move around the agenda just slightly because I see we have Representative Jordan here already. So we'll actually start with your bill, but first I'm going to do approval of the minutes from April 13, 2023. Vice Chair Edelson, can I get a motion?
That's my motion.
Wonderful. So all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed, please say no. The motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. So our first bill today will be House File 24, the Safe Drinking Water Lead Line Replacement. And I will move that House File 24 be placed on the General Register. So welcome, and to your bill, Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Chair Olson and members of the committee. Good morning. I'm excited to present House File 24, which is a bill to fundamentally protect Minnesotans from exposure to lead in their drinking water through lead service lines. If there's one takeaway I want us all to have this Monday morning, it's that no amount of exposure to lead is safe. Lead service lines are one of the largest sources of lead in Minnesota's drinking water, and almost always lead service lines are both publicly and privately owned. And so both parts of the line must be replaced simultaneously because that's how, one, pipes work, and two, if we try to replace just parts of pipe, you could actually increase the lead concentration in a drinking water. So here are the ways and the means that we will work to get the lead out of our pipes. The total cost of the bill is $240 million. That is not the entirety of Minnesota's needs, but it is an excellent start. This bill establishes eligible recipients for these funds and uses of the grant to actually replace these lead service lines. Eligible recipients are community public water suppliers of a community water system, so think municipalities, suppliers of other residential drinking water systems, and any applicant that is eligible for loans and grants under the Federal Safe Drinking Water Act. Uses of the grant include removing and replacing lead water lines, construction costs, providing information to residents on the benefits and timeline of removing it, so think about sometimes the postcards you get from your city or your water supplier about work happening, and then also repaying debt incurred for any of the other uses of replacing these lead service lines. Grant money can be used to pay for 100% of the cost of replacing privately owned lead lines and only 50% of those lines that are publicly owned. This bill also promotes planning. It says that the PFA needs to give priority to cities, local water systems, and other applicants that use grant proceeds as part of a plan to remove all of the lead lines in their jurisdiction. Plans should include the following: how the recipient will maximize the number of property owners participating, including how the participant will maximize the number of participating property owners with portions of water lines that are privately owned, including low-income and disadvantaged communities, how the recipient will maximize the efficient use of funds by coordinating the replacement of both sections of the line, how the recipient, so the municipality or the water system, will minimize the partial replacement of lead lines, and how equity for disadvantaged groups and imminent public health crises is prioritized within the plan. Further, the bill requires that grant applicants that have at least 50,000 water connections must submit a workforce plan as part of their application that describes how the applicant will maximize the use of registered apprentices and workers from communities that are underrepresented in the construction industry. There's a prevailing wage portion, a report portion, so we can check in on this. The other thing that I think is an exciting part of this bill is mapping grants. So Section 3 creates a smaller, separate program at MDH to provide mapping grants to municipalities. So the federal government, under the new EPA lead and copper rule, is requiring all municipalities to have the map of their lead service lines to be provided by October of 2024. And so it's really important that our cities are getting these resources to be able to provide that and be in compliance. And so there are $10 million from the general fund each year from fiscal year 24 and 25, so $20 million total. The other thing to keep in mind with that is, let's say there is extra money left over from mapping grants, that money can then be rolled over into the use of replacing the lines itself. The bill also unlocks our federal funding for lead service line replacement. Minnesota, under the IIJA, Minnesota will receive an additional $215 million over the course of the next 5 years, with 50% of that in the form of grants, and the other 50% in the form of loans. This bill also contains some policy provisions to ensure no cost to residents and sets an interest rate of 0% for the loans. And that's the bill and some of the fiscal components of it, Chair Olson, and I can stand for member questions.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Discussion to House File 24. Lead Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Jordan, on page 7 of the fiscal note, there's a technical comment that says that community water systems are not considered municipalities. And it states that these individual groups are not eligible for the grant program. Are there any plans to include those in there so we can actually get the resolve this issue for all Minnesotans?
Representative Jordan.
You know, I think that's a technical comment that could be addressed, and maybe Director Freeman is here and can talk about it. The bill is intended, and it says very explicitly in the bill that the goal is to replace all lead service lines, and that is how this bill is intended to be. I think we are working on a slight technical change to the bill. I know Director Freeman is here and could talk a little bit more about that and how we can prioritize those systems. But I do know that anyone that is eligible for a grant under the under federal clean drinking water provisions is eligible for these grants. And the intention of this bill is to make sure that lead service lines that connect homes are prioritized and everyone is eligible for this.
Representative Garofalo, would you like Mr. Freeman to also respond to that as well?
Yes, just Madam Chair, the only question is just, I don't want to prolong this, but the comments in the fiscal note are that there's community water systems that would not be available for these grants. If we could just clarify if that's... If there's any plans to address that or if that's inaccurate.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Jeff Freeman. I'm the executive director of the Public Facilities Authority. In the fiscal note, I mean, for the PFA, we typically refer to municipalities as our borrowers, but with the health department and with these funds and with all of the drinking water funds, it's really public water suppliers that are the key eligible entity. In most cases, that's the same as a municipality, but if there are public water suppliers that are other than municipalities, they would also be eligible for these funds.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So in the fiscal note, it lists entities that would not be eligible for the grant program. Are those entities eligible for the grant program?
Mr. Freeman, so I think page 7 of the fiscal note under the technical comment mid part is where you're talking about, Representative Garofalo. It says community water systems are not considered municipalities and included an additional 234 townships. So I think you're trying to clarify if those would actually be covered by the funds in this bill.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
So, Mr. Freeman.
Madam Chair, I think that statement is not correct. I think it really is public water suppliers that are the eligible entity under the, or municipalities. Public water suppliers are one of the, and
Representative Jordan.
Madam Chair, representatives, I would direct members to 2.24 of the eligible recipients. So these are all of the eligible recipients under grants. Community public water suppliers of a community water system as defined in Code of Federal Regulations, Title 40, Section 141.2, and I would rely on nonpartisan staff to pull up that particular rule. It would include municipalities, suppliers of other residential drinking water systems, and any applicant eligible for loans and grants under the Federal Safe Drinking Water Act. So those are I read this technical comment as inaccurate, and I believe Director Freeman does as well, based on the bill language itself.
Representative Garofalo.
So, Madam Chair, and perhaps Representative Jordan, before this goes to the floor, you can check in with the Legislative Budget Office on that. I actually think that they're correct and that that's a problem that needs fixing, but if you guys could fix that before you go to the floor, I think that would be a good thing. Thank you.
Representative Jordan.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, that's a great tip, and I will be pursuing that.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Freeman. Any further discussion to House File 24? Okay. Seeing none, final word, Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. No amount of exposure to lead is safe. This is a bill that is going to help all of our communities, whether you represent Minneapolis like I do, or some of the smallest townships in our state, or a suburb, or anywhere in between. So I ask for members' support. It's a good bill that has a lot of support from all of our communities.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. I renew my motion that House File 24 be placed on the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, please say no. The motion prevails and House File 24 has been placed on the General Register. Thank you, Representative Jordan. So we'll go back to our first bill on the agenda today, which is Senate File 1955, Representative Vang. So welcome to the committee. As you make your way up and get settled, I will move that Senate File 1955 be placed on the General Register. And I will also, so this, we are taking up the Senate file, so I will also move to delete everything after the enacting clause and insert the language from House File 2278, the first engrossment. So any discussion to that motion to insert the House language? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, please say no. The motion prevails and the language is adopted. So would you like to describe your bill first and then we can do the A16 amendment, or do you prefer to just do the A16 amendment now?
We can do the A16 amendment, Madam Chair.
So I will move the A16 amendment. This is the grant management language that we have been putting on all of the budget bills thus far. Any discussion to the A16 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, please say no. The motion prevails and the A16 amendment is adopted. So to your bill as amended in the shape you need it to be today. So Representative Vang.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 2278, as amended, is the Ag Budget Bill, which makes comprehensive investments in food, land, and farmers. Some of the biggest investments goes towards the Grain Indemnity Fund, which is a one-time $5 million to provide a safety net for grain producers from grain elevator failures, $3 million for the popular dairy with the eye program to incentivize dairy producers to participate in a federal risk management program. There's $2 million in one-time funding for hemp fiber processing to help build out the hemp industry. The bill also makes strong investments in improving food access, such as farm to school and meat processing, improving soil health through soil health equipment grants, cover crops and forever grain, and also supporting pollinators. It also makes investments in expanding the capacity of the department to be able to provide services to farmers, such as establishing a climate coordinator, adding a person to the international marketing team, and to the Rural Finance Authority. You can see priorities from big ag to small ag, rural farmers and urban farmers, for the environment and sustainability of agriculture. The final part of the budget is $100 million for broadband. 60% will go towards the border-to-border grants to help build infrastructure in unserved and underserved areas, and 40% will go towards the low-density program that focuses on communities with the highest barriers on building out broadband. And with that, Madam Chair, that is a very quick high-level overview of the Ag Budget Bill, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Representative Vang. Discussion to the bill. Representative Cleaborne.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Chair Vang. I just want to say thank you. It's a really good bill. It's a comprehensive bill. It's a very thoughtful bill. I appreciate the hard work that you have done in agriculture since your time at the legislature, and I want to thank you so much for including the provisions for Forever Green. Your thoughtfulness and understanding of the changing environment of agriculture and meeting the needs of our climate together are really important. We all know that every farmer wants to protect their soil and their water, and this is an awesome way to do that. So thank you very much. I appreciate your dedication to agriculture.
Thank you, Representative Cleaborne. Further discussion, Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the author. I know that you're making some changes to the Board of Animal Health. Could you detail some of the changes from what's currently happening today to what you're proposing?
Representative Vang.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the Board of Animal Health, this is Representative Hansen's bill that was included into the bill. He makes some changes to add, I think, about the language currently sits as 11 members, to add from 6 to 11 members, and to include additional representation such as companion animal, to those try to remember the language, I'm trying to remember the section too as well. Perhaps nonpartisan staff can help me with that too.
Madam Chair, I have it for her. It's actually
Representative Nash.
Section 3, lines 21.19 is the companion animal board. And just, I'm trying to, last year I worked very hard to prevent the Board of Animal Health for companion animals from becoming a reality because it had some concerns. And I'm just concerned that if you're adding, how many are going to be for the companion animals that you're adding to the board, I guess was ultimately the question I'd be asking.
Representative Vang.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Nash, I think as of now, it doesn't specify how many are that needs to represent a companion animal board. I think at least one. And you know, this is something that Lead Anderson and I have been talking about, and I'm open to amending for the language.
Representative Nash.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Vang, would you be open to putting a restriction on the number of people that would be representing the board of companion animals?
Representative Vang.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Nash. I can't be open to that. I think we have to look at the language first. You know, right now the language is as 11, and I'm open to lowering that number too as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Vang, I'm curious as to, I see that there's $300,000 in here for a climate implementation coordinator. Could you explain to me how many FTEs the $300,000 will buy the taxpayers of Minnesota, and what this coordinator and their office will be doing?
Representative Vang.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Scott, this is actually one of the governor's priorities, part of the recommendations, and I can have the department come here to help answer the question about, I believe it is for one position, FTE, and as we continue to have more conversations about how to be more climate resilient, this coordinator will help, I believe, to coordinate resources from both the federal programs and the state to coordinate efforts in becoming a more climate resilient agriculture.
Representative Scott.
Thank you. Well, yeah, I would like to hear from the department. I thought you might have the answer on how many FTEs. If it's just one person receiving $300,000, that seems like a really good gig, you know. So I'm hoping that there's more than one employee that we're. Thank you.
Looks like we have someone from the department here. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Andrea Vable. I serve as Deputy Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Thank you so much for the question, Representative Scott. So the $300,000 is for the biennium, so it's $150,000 per year. So it is for one position. And the climate coordinator, we're really focusing on, again, the opportunities that exist at the federal level particularly. There's a lot of opportunity in terms of funding and partnerships across states that we've not been able to capitalize on simply because we do not have the capacity. So we need to make sure that we've got those folks at the department that can help, again, amongst our sister agencies, but also the important opportunities that exist in the federal level.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that answer. Will this new position require rulemaking?
And is it Ms. I missed your last name, Vable?
Vable.
Vable. Okay, Ms. Vable.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Scott. It does not require rulemaking. This is just a person that we would hire to work at the department that would coordinate and facilitate opportunities, again, at the federal level, also among sister agencies and other states.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Vable, so... what kind of programs, I don't sit on the Ag Committee, obviously, what kind of programs would this person coordinate with the federal government? What programs are out there that we need to tap into?
Ms. Bob.
Madam Chair, Representative Scott. So the USDA has done quite a bit of work, particularly in climate smart commodities, particularly through the Farm Bill, but also through other large pieces of legislation like the IIJA and the IRA. So there's a lot of opportunity there that, again, states can take advantage of, but we have just not simply had the capacity at the department to be able to do such things.
Representative Scott.
Thank you. And so if any of those programs federally go away, would this position then go away too? We wouldn't need that person anymore?
Ms. Bob.
Madam Chair, Representative Scott, these programs are actually scheduled to go out quite a long time. Certainly, again, we would reevaluate at such time. But there's also a lot of opportunities, again, amongst other states or private opportunities that arise, again, that the state can take advantage of. But again, we would certainly reevaluate that should federal funding go dry.
Representative Scott.
That's all. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Lead Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the author, thank you for bringing your bill forward to us. My first question is on line 314 of the spreadsheet. It looks like we have capital equipment, but capital is spelled with an O. Are we going to be building anything here in the state capital that this is financing?
Representative Vang.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Graffel, for pointing out that minor technical mistake. definitely make the adjustment.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the author. There are some fee increases that are enclosed in this bill. Primarily, it appears non-general fund total. $19.7 million looks like, in light of the very generous target that your committee has, any thoughts to waiving those fees and just using the surplus money to cover those?
Representative Vang.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Graffel, can you point to which line item you're talking about?
Line 373.
Representative Vang, state for all members following along, page 10, line 373, the fiscal year 24-25 non-general fund total. Representative Vang.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe, Representative Graffel, you're talking about the, are you talking about the fertilizer fee tonnage?
And Madam Chair and Representative
Graffel.
So 373 is a summary of all revenue adjustments for the non-general fund total. And sometimes when these are in parentheses, they can be listed backwards. But in this case, it says revenue adjustments, non-general fund total is $19,706,000. I view that as a cost of the general fund. Maybe nonpartisan staff could tell me if I'm wrong. I view that as revenue to the general fund. Is that not the case?
Representative Vang, would you like Mr. Savory, I see, is at the ready to respond. So.
Yes, please.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself to the record.
Madam Chair and members, for the tape, Ken Savory, House Fiscal Staff. Chair and members, on line 373 is the sum total of non-general fund revenue that is changing in the particular ag bill. So for example, line 364, there's an item related to food licensing modernization. That would be additional revenue that would be coming into the ag fund. And then there are several others which I can go through, but that's just an example of the various ones that are changing. Another example would be, it doesn't necessarily have to increase. On line 365, there's a language in this bill that would change the way in which PFAS chemicals are regulated, and because of that, that would be a drop in revenue to the ag fund because it would no longer be able to be registered and collect a fee.
Representative Brock.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for either the chair or for the nonpartisan staff. So is the $19 million there that we see on line 373, is that the net total of increased revenue, or is that a reduction in revenue?
Mr. Savory.
Chair and members, the $19.7 million represents an increase of revenue to the Ag Fund in FY24 and 25, but does include all reductions as well. For example, line 373 in the FY24 column is the sum total of the $3.8 million, the negative $803,000, and all the other ones within that category. So it is the sum net total of our new revenues to the Ag Fund.
Representative Graffel.
Thank you. So, Madam Chair and Representative Vang, any consideration instead of doing those fee increases that you had to offset those costs and spend the money from the $17.5 billion budget surplus we have?
Representative Vang.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this is something that we've had talked about with the department, and I think it's important that we continue to look at how we can continue to sustain the services of the department as, we look at, as y'all have seen, the ag budget targets tend to have us pretty small target. And so as we look into the future of how we continue to maintain services for agriculture, I think these fees are can be critical to sustaining that.
Representative Rothwell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just ask the chair to please consider getting rid of those fees, especially considering the large cost we have. My final question and more of a comment, and I recognize that your committee had a sub-target for this, but I want to apologize to members of the committee because this is probably the 50th time you've heard me complain about this. This is the border-to-border broadband grant program. Maybe it's the first time you've heard me go on this diatribe. So I have the benefit in my private sector job of being a network engineer. The technology that we're, evolution of technology for high-speed bandwidth is towards cellular data, towards fixed wireless, towards satellite. I actually had the benefit of having an entity come to me and ask me to sign a letter of support for one of these projects. We ran the numbers on it. We figured out that in the specific project in my district that I refused to sign off on was we could install the Starlink satellite system for every single recipient in the district. We could pay for the operating costs for 10 years, and we would still save money compared to the fixed fiber in the ground implementation that we're seeing continually incentivized at the federal and state level. Madam Chair, I recognize that you were given a target for this committee to spend $100 million. In your opportunity in conference committee, I would really encourage you to try to reduce that number and to repurpose those dollars elsewhere, whether it's reducing fees or whether it's finding other purposes for those monies. The money that we're throwing into the broadband grant program, there's certainly a need. We all support high-speed bandwidth going to all Minnesotans, but right now every Minnesotan, all 87 counties has access to high-speed bandwidth. What we're seeing is an incentive and subsidy program towards putting fiber in the ground, and that's just not a wise use of our dollars. So please, going forward, if you're looking for money, that's the one to go after. Reduce that and put it elsewhere, and you'll forever have my appreciation. I'll be voting no on the bill today, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Groff. Maybe if we vote yes on the floor, you could be part of the conference committee.
No, not a chance. No. I would rather drink lead paint, Madam Chair.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm sorry to go after our lead and his conclusions on the bill, but I see here that we're raising the fees, the fertilizer tonnage fee increase. And I'm wondering why we're increasing such an essential part of farming. Why are we increasing that?
Representative Vang.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will ask the department to help me answer that question. This is part of the governor's recommendations.
Representative Scott.
Thanks, Madam Chair. So you don't know the answer to that? Representative Vang.
Madam Chair, thank you, Representative Scott. My answer is the same as what I've said to Representative Guafalo about the importance of making sure that we are able to sustain the services to the agriculture community. And I believe you will like a more detailed answer about specifically why the fertilizer fee tonnage, and I think Commissioner Peterson can help answer that.
Commissioner Peterson, I see you're making your way down. So when you get here, if you want to, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record, and you can proceed.
Hi, Madam Chair, members, Tom Peterson, Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. To Representative Scott's question, never take raising fees lightly. It's something, and some of our fees we can do by, I can make that decision myself and have as commissioner. Depending on our funds and different pieces. But as we put together our budgets within the Department of Agriculture, we look at the structural integrity of those funds and then what we need to deliver back to the farmers, and that's inspections. That is plant inspections. That is permitting for new facilities, for new sites. That is anhydrous tank inspections. We do have problems and people get hurt. Right now we're on currently on a 7 or 8 year inspection routine. And so when we look at our funding mechanism for that has been our dedicated fees, not general fund dollars. So we look at inflation and other things that have affected that division. Structurally, this is where the money has come from for that fund. And again, don't want to raise fees. It's gonna be to the plant owner and then back to the farmer. So it does go back to them, and we do consider that. We've looked at the costs. It's, you know, not an insignificant cost, but it can be, you know, a dollar, a couple dollars an acre, something like that, back to the farmer, which is normal as we look at raising fees and lowering fees throughout the year on other different things that we have. But looking at what the farmer gets out of this in the end is something that we've looked at. We can, as we go forward, as Representative Garofalo said, always consider to have the discussion. We've come to the department or to the legislature and say, here's what we need to deliver timely permitting for farmers in those plants, timely inspection to those plants to keep the farmers and the workers safe. And so that's kind of where we ended up with that.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner Peterson, over the last 2 to 3 years, input costs have increased greatly for our folks in agriculture. And one of those expenses has been the increase in the price of fertilizer. About how much, I'm assuming that you would have an idea, over the last 2-3 years, how much has fertilizer gone up in price?
Commissioner Peterson.
Madam Chair and Representative Scott, it's actually come down since the beginning of the year. The problem with fertilizer, it had maybe gone up, you know, and again, we could get these exact numbers too, but it more than quadrupled in some cases. And in working with farmers this last year, the price really did drop this last fall. The problem was a lot of farmers had purchased their fertilizer, and you may buy your fertilizer, lock it in you know, September, October. And so it's interesting, just my anecdotal evidence of talking to farmers, some haven't, you know, captured in on that. So it has gone up quite a bit, but it's also come back down now, and we're going to see where the trends go on that. So, yeah, and again, I don't take this lightly. Believe me, I've already talked to about 4 or 5 different farmers this morning every day when we talk about their input costs and what's driving that. But they also need to know that they're going to have the product in a timely manner, that they're going to have the product safely. Those are also things that farmers take into consideration as well. And then look at the overall cost to them. And this is why it's not an insignificant cost. It's not going to make or break them on this fee that we're raising them.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the prices of fertilizer had quadrupled.
And
you said there's been a reduction. Mm-hmm. Has it gone back to the pre-quadrupled price?
Commissioner Peterson.
Madam Chair, Representative, no.
Representative Scott.
And so where from that quadrupled price, you know, with the current reduction, is it, you know, twice as much as it was, 3 times as much?
Commissioner Peterson.
Madam Chair, Representative, it depends on the type of, you know, whether it's anhydrous or urea. Farmers are also moving around a lot. The war in Ukraine has had some different things on that. Although we don't get a lot of product from there, it affects the whole market. And so it has not returned, you know, it's maybe back, and from what farmers have told me, half, you know, or less.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Peterson. You did beat me in grocery bagging a year or so ago, and I'm still a little bitter about that. But thank you for answering the questions. And I just see, you know, this is going to make food costs go up for everybody. The more input costs that farmers have, the more that it's going to cost to produce food for all of us and for the world. And I just think it's wrongheaded to be raising these kind of fees right now when we have a $17 billion surplus. Why are we raising fees on the backs of farmers and something as essential as putting food in the bellies of people? I just think it's wrongheaded, and I can't support this bill.
So we have Representative Nash back on the list, which is fine. And then after we'll do Representative Nash, and I don't have anyone else on the list, then we'll go to Representative Vang to close so that we have time for cannabis today too. So Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the Commissioner, I always appreciate when you come out to my district, and we have a very common bond around making sure that the farmers in Carver County and across our state are well taken care of. And you and I know some of the same Carver County farmers. And I've had they and a lot of 4-H people in my office, and I talk to them on a fairly regular basis. Another dollar an acre on input costs is going to be really, really hard to swallow. And, you know, we could probably exchange contacts. I bet we have as many of the same contacts in our phones for Carver County farmers. I don't know how I go back and sell them on this. I can't and won't, because in a time where they are honestly, I don't remember what the close of corn was on Friday. You probably do. But they're still fighting. And, you know, particularly the dairy farmers in Carver County, they're happy if they break even, and you know that. And they grow a lot of their own feed. And now we're going to apply a dollar an acre on top of their feed that they're growing to take care of their milk herd. What am I supposed to tell them, if you would, Commissioner? Mm-hmm.
Commissioner Peterson.
Madam Chair and Representative Nash agreed, for some farmers right now it's tough. I also remind you that farmers also had record income this last year, and it's not something that we look at. Input costs are also high, but when you look at bottom lines, I'll agree, dairy and pork right now, farmers are really struggling. You do have a lot of dairy farmers in Carver County, and we want to keep all of the ones that we have. And so we look at the investment that it costs. So what do you get for those couple of dollars an acre that you're going to rise? You're going to get safety. You're going to get more safety. You're going to get availability. You're going to get things for that. That's what we get when we raise fees in the government. We don't take it lightly, believe me. I go to my feed mill. I go to the auctions on Saturday. When I raise fees, I hear it firsthand, and good to hear. But I will say, as Representative Vang said and Representative Garofalo, as we go through this and we look at when we build a budget, we have to be fiscally responsible and say this is what it costs to deliver these services. So when somebody gets hurt, when a plant is not getting permitted, this is why. And so we say, here's what we're going to put forward. And so we can also look at that and say, here's what we need, whether it's from general fund or not. What I'm also telling you is this is a program, as we put together our budget, that we would like to have this happen, but we fund this through fees. So if we need it through general fund, that's a discussion we can have in conference committee or others. But right now in the House bill, it's put forward through the fee, as also the governor put forward.
Representative Nash.
Madam Chair, I'll be very brief. Well, Commissioner, you and I have talked about what I'm about to talk about, but the dairy farmers in Carver County have had just a really rough go. And you remember the farmer that killed himself a couple years ago because he wasn't making enough. He owed money on implements and to everybody. And because he was desperate and in a bad place, he chose to take his life. This is just going to add another item on the ledger for a lot of these dairy farmers that they don't know how to make it. You know, I have dairy farmers in Carver County that on a regular basis call me. They said, Jim, we're about to sell off the herd. And you know two families like I do that within the last 2 years they were prominent dairy farmers in Carver County, and they got out because they just couldn't do it anymore. And in a time when we have a record surplus, Commissioner, we're going to add fees on top of farmers like a dairy farmer, like a pork farmer, like Representative Burkle, who's doing turkeys. All these inputs do not get added blindly. Here at the Capitol, they do. It's just another line on a budget item. But when you drive up the dirt road to the farm, like you do when you go home, I can't get out of the car and tell them that I'm coming with cheery news. Or when I go to a Farm Bureau meeting and can't tell them that good things are happening. We have a record surplus, and we're going to add another thing on top of the farmers again. I just can't support this, and I won't support this. It is going to hurt more farm families who are already, some of them are working city jobs, and you know that too. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Commissioner Peterson, if you want to comment, then we'll go to closing comments from the chair. Commissioner Peterson.
Madam Chair and Representative, so noted. And also just keep in mind in dairy for this, there are many things for dairy farmers in this bill, including a $3 million set aside to help our farmers pay an insurance premium, which is going to return thousands of dollars to those dairy farmers that sign up for that. Again, this is targeted to dairy farmers who are in Carver and County, especially would fit into that size. So it's a balanced approach that, you know, that we work on taking. So thank you, though.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you for the discussion. Thank you, Representative Vang, for putting a good bill together. I know we honed in on kind of one section that's actually out of the purview of being in the budget target in the general fund, but there is so much good stuff in your bill within the target you were given, and just thank you for bringing that forward, too. So final word on your bill, Representative Vang.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, we talked a lot about the fees, this committee, but I don't want that to overshadow the many great direct investments that we make to farmers, from education to soil health to lowering the inputs on equipment costs. For example, as we all know, farming can be pretty capital intensive, and that's one of the enormous help that we can do at the state is to support a lot of their intensive capital equipment costs that they put towards sustaining their land. And, you know, like, as I said, this is a pretty comprehensive bill from food, land, and to farmers. There's a lot, there's a piece in this bill that everybody can be happy about. So with that, Madam Chair, I appreciate the opportunity to present this bill, and I appreciate the committee support.
Motion that Senate File 1955 as amended be placed on the General Register and that nonpartisan staff be directed to make technical changes as necessary. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 All those opposed, please say no.
No.
The motion prevails and Senate File 1955 as amended has been placed on the General Register. Thank you, Representative Vang. So the next bill on the agenda today is the Cannabis Bill, House File 100. So Representative Stevenson, welcome to the committee. As you make your way up, I will move that House File 100 be placed on the General Register.
Just let it flow.
And I also know we have two amendments, your author's amendment and the grant review, so we'll take those up before we get to the bill description. So I will move the A90 amendment. Any discussion to the A90 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, please say no. Motion prevails and the A90 is adopted. I will also move the A89 amendment, which is the grant review language we've been adopting on all budget bills. Any discussion to that? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A89, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, please say no. The motion prevails and the A89 is adopted. So to the bill as amended, Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House File 100 is the cannabis legalization bill. I think probably every member on the committee has seen this bill somewhere else before, as this is our 15th committee stop, but I'm very happy to be saving the best for last, Madam Chair, and to be here in Ways and Means. We did just adopt, thank you, the A90 amendment, which put in the appropriations in the bill, and with that, the tracking sheet that I understand is distributed is a good summary of the fiscal impact of the bill. Just for members' interest, I'll note two of the appropriations that people have been paying close attention to that I had been promising would be coming eventually once we had a fiscal note. They are now in the bill, including the grants to local public health and the drug recognition experts training that I know several members have been particularly interested in. Those are funded at the request levels, including also funding for the Poison Control Center and the grant funding in the bill that has been anticipated. The bill has a net cost to the general fund in the first biennium of $76 million and a net savings to the general fund of $17 million in the second biennium. This is largely due to the fact that while we have costs starting up right away from setting up the agency and doing the expungement work, so on and so forth, tax revenue generated from cannabis sales doesn't begin right at the beginning because obviously it takes some time to set up the agency, do the rulemaking, do the licensing, get the businesses up and running. So there's a bit of a lag there, but you can see that over the long run, the bill is more than self-supporting. With that, Madam Chair, I'm happy to answer questions.
Discussion to the bill. Representative Nash.
Thanks, Madam Chair, and to the author. I think this is the second or third time I've heard the bill, and there are some questions that I've had regarding local control, and particularly for the committee that we're in right now. If I'm reading the A90 correctly, and we didn't have a whole lot of chance to talk about the A90 before we adopted it, but you're not allowing local entities, municipalities, or otherwise to tax for this locally, is that correct?
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Nash, yes, that's correct.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the author, can you maybe help me understand that? Because as you and I talked about in state government finance, they're going to have a lot of things that they have to deal with locally. So I'm just going to put on the former mayor of Waconia's hat. And if this happens, they're not going to be able to tax for it, and yet they have to do some of the regulatory work that's going to happen locally, licensing provisions and things like that they have to follow up on. Why is it that you've chosen to not allow them to tax locally?
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Nash, to begin with, it's important to know that while we don't allow them to tax, that's not to say that there's no funding for local government in the bill. You mentioned one right off the bat, which is that there are some regulatory and licensing features that local governments are able to do, and they're able to charge licensing fees, and those fees are significant for larger retail operations. And that should fund the cost of what they are asked to do under the bill, ensuring that the products sold in those retail establishments are legal under the bill and that sales aren't occurring to minors. In addition, there are some grant programs and other appropriations in the bill. I just mentioned one a second ago, which is grants to local public health, which are $10 million on an annual basis, $9 million to local governments, $1 million to tribal governments. So there is funding for local governments in the bill. The reason why, however, we chose not to allow local governments to tax directly, and it's consistent with other decisions related to local government in the bill that we've discussed in prior committees, is that one of the principal aims of this legislation is to curb the illicit market, replace an illicit marketplace with a legitimate marketplace. And what we have seen in other states that have legalized cannabis is if they've given local governments the ability to tax, it increases the cost of legal cannabis to the point that illicit market cannabis continues to thrive and even, in some cases, really prosper. California is the best example of this, where local governments have the ability to institute very significant taxation, and it's led to a significant gap between the cost of legal cannabis and illicit market cannabis.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, we'll disagree to a point on that. A good friend of mine from high school I used to play football with is the police chief of a city in Colorado, and he said that the illicit market just reacts from market forces and lowers the price of their product. So I'm not sure that I necessarily agree with that. But, one of the problems I still have with the bill is that the lack of local control. And you and I, we spent a few minutes in Chair Cleburne's committee hammering through this. The fact that we're effectively telling cities that you can't tax this and that you also can't say no, I still find that quite problematic, because we have had mechanisms for cities by referenda to vote themselves as a dry city, and we had that amendment in state government finance, and we'll have it again for you on the floor. This just seems very, very heavy-handed, both from the imposition or the lack of the ability to impose a local tax, but also from not the law enforcement, but some of the code enforcements. I just find this very, very troubling. And I guess I had a question in you just said regarding the local fees. Where is that in your A90 or in the main body of the bill?
Representative Stevenson.
Okay. It's not in the A90. Madam Chair, Representative Nash, it's not in the A90. And I'm going to ask Ben Johnson here. He's looking too.
Nonpartisan staff coming up to the table, so welcome to the committee.
Is it in the? Oh, it's right here in the.
Continue, Representative Houston. Otherwise, I can go to nonpartisan staff there too.
Yeah, okay. Madam Chair, Representative Nash, so Section 11 of Article 1, beginning on page 34, lays out the fee schedule in the bill. And then In paragraph A, it discusses how the local unit of government is able to charge section 22 of Article 1, Subdivision 2, on page 52.15.
Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just because I'm still flipping to that in the very large bill, what is that fee that they're able to impose locally?
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Nash, it is a percentage of the fee that is that the state's able to charge. So basically, whatever the state licensing fee is, the local unit government's able to charge 50% of that fee. It depends on the size of the business.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'm glad that we finally have a fiscal note, and I think we are the first committee to have the fiscal note, if I'm not incorrect.
But
a complete one.
It was in, the Madam Chair, the Representative Nash, the fiscal note was available in the Taxes Committee as well.
Well, it's no surprise that I'll be voting no on this. We use the term not ready for prime time a lot. I think that I'll use it again, but it just seems very troubling that many of the things that we've been talking about and with both you and in general are still not close to reality. So I'll just be voting no. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the author. Can you tell me what the overall benefit to society and the community is for this particular bill?
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Petersburg, that's a big question. There's a lot of benefit from doing this. To begin with, the policy that we currently have with regard to cannabis is not achieving any of its aims and comes at a great cost to our society. So in other words, our current laws are doing more harm than good. Cannabis laws disproportionately impact communities of color with achieving very little in the way of public safety benefit. I speak from experience. As you might know, I'm a prosecutor in my day job, and I think we allocate far too many resources to cannabis at the expense of more serious crime. Minnesotans want this change. They are ready for it. There's a lot of responsible usage that can happen for cannabis with by way of pain mitigation and treatment. And I think that's demonstrated by the fact that in every single state that has legalized adult use cannabis or medical cannabis in the country, we've seen a drop in opioid overdose deaths. They're from veterans who can't access cannabis through the federal VA, even with our medical program in Minnesota, to the disparate impacts on communities of color in our correction system, to the opportunities for economic engagement. I think there's a number of benefits to this bill, which is probably why the majority of Minnesotans in every single survey that I've ever seen support legalization.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. But, you know, it seems like that argument is true for almost all of our illegal drugs. I mean, the cost of enforcing and whatever is extremely high, prosecution, et cetera. But we're making a decision based upon cannabis and marijuana. And I understand that a lot of people want it. That doesn't necessarily reflect the need or the benefit to the community. Just because we want it doesn't necessarily mean it's good for us. I want lots of sugar, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's good for me. So I'm just kind of curious if that's not true for all illegal drugs that we use. Why is this one different than any of the others?
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Petersburg, I think that the quantifiable harm to society between cannabis and other illicit substances is easily measured. I think that the comparison falls apart pretty quickly. I think that cannabis, in terms of societal impact, is not nearly as significant as alcohol, a legal substance, in the state of Minnesota. And, you know, I don't think anyone's proposing to outlaw your sugar either, so I think you can rest at ease.
Representative Peters.
Thank you. I would just say, you know, I think the jury is still out on whether or not it's going to have an impact in society or not, and we'll see. I have lots of relatives in other states that have cannabis use, and there are a lot more concerns and a lot more anecdotal, certainly information in regards to that. So I think it's just dangerous at this time, but I can't support the bill either. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair. For the author, see, we've got
9.5 million in the first biennium, and 26-27 another 9.3 million for the cannabis expungement board. Do you not see a need for that to go down over the next biennium?
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Novotny, the costs in the cannabis expungement board are spread out over the 5 years. I assume that the board is operational from the summer through 28. And they have a lot of work to do. In the fiscal note, it talks about how there are, and I'd have to go get the exact number, I don't have it on my fingertips, but the thousands upon thousands of convictions that they will be reviewing and potentially taking action on, sorting through. It's a big job because the legacy of the current prohibition regime is immense and spans decades. So we're asking the board to take on a big job, and it's not surprising it will take them significant resources and significant time to do it.
Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Stevenson. So my question is this. We're spending over $18 million on this board to do all this expungement. I assume at some point in your prosecuting career you started out on misdemeanors, petty misdemeanors. Did you ever do a speed trial? And I'll just get into the question, because I have a commercial driver's license, and therefore a speeding ticket on my driving license, speaking from experience, lasts a long time, stays in there a long time. One of my speeding tickets was in a place where they had posted the speed limit at 55, and that current speed limit in that same location is now 70. Should I have that speeding ticket taken off my driving record because the zone posted speed limit changed?
Representative
Stevenson. Madam Chair, Representative Novotny, I think you have something that you should be taken up with, maybe additional legislation in the future. And I actually think, I don't know for a fact, it's not my bill, but I think that Representative Long's Clean Slate Act might be here to help you out with that in particular in the public safety bill.
Representative Novotny.
My point is you do actions based on the laws that exist at the time, and they're illegal or not illegal, and we're spending $18 million to change the past and erase convictions. How many of these convictions, as you know, were a plea down and agreement for other things, and we're just going to wipe those all out now? I see that you added a substantial amount of money for the drug recognition evaluators, the DRE training. I appreciate that. And I think it's a recognition of what we're going to have. Last week in transportation, we had the chair of transportation mention that increased deaths and increased injury accidents are a justification for changing a lot of things, and we should all have the goal of reducing traffic deaths and injuries. Do you see an increase in deaths and injuries coming after this bill is passed?
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Novotny, I think the data, you know, I'm a guy who likes to look at evidence and data, and I think the evidence and data from other states is mixed, and it depends on the study and the methodology of the study. As we discussed in the Public Safety Committee and also in the Transportation Committee, one of the challenges on data for cannabis is that it remains in your stream, your detectable in your body long after you are impaired. And so some data does show increases in traffic crashes and fatalities after legalization for the amount for people who had cannabis in their system, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they were impaired at the time of the incident, because you know you could become intoxicated on cannabis on a Friday night, be in an accident later in the weekend many hours after you were no longer impaired, and it would still be detectable days after it's impaired, and it would still be detectable in your bloodstream. Other studies that have tried to control for that particular phenomena have found negligible increases in accidents and fatalities. I also think that in our bill, we do a lot to try and address this issue, starting right away this summer with the oral fluid project, but you mentioned the drug recognition experts, the education, the treatment. There's a lot of things in the bill trying to get it at this problem.
And last area I'd just like to address, you've got 8.3 million over 24-25 for different things to help out the Department of Public Safety, including replacing the drug canines, providing accident reconstructions, identifying investigations, and the last part of it is, and sealing expunged records. Starts out, that sounds like a lot of money, but then we've got all these different ways that the money's going to be pulled apart. How much do you see, and I looked through, I couldn't find it, maybe there is a breakdown, how much of the 8.3 million over 2 years is set aside for the sealing of expunged records?
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Novotny, I do think that there was at least a statement in here about how that breaks down. One moment.
I also think, just while I'm looking, I think that you have understated the amount that goes to DPS. In my tracking sheet, it's significantly larger than that, than the 8.3 million that you indicate in the biennium.
I'm taking these numbers off the A90.
Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair. I'm taking these numbers off the A90 line 1824 through 1829. And as long as you're looking and this would be my...
Representative Notney, I'll so folks also see, I just want to point out to your point, Representative Notney, there is the fiscal tracking sheet that goes along with it that has a little bit more to that picture than just what's in that A90 amendment. But continue on, Representative Notney.
Thank you, Chair. The last part of the thing, and I promise I will be done after this, this is money just for the DPS to take care of sealing these expunged records. Every law enforcement agency, from what I understand, that has these records out in the state is also going to be going and spending a lot of time and money expunging their records and doing all that. Is there any money available to help with the extra work that's going to be done on the local level? I see, as usual, we're taking care of the state, but is there anything going to the local expungement cost?
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Novotny. So first, on the to go back, I did look at this further while we're talking here. So while we're looking at lines 26, 27, 28 on the fiscal tracking spreadsheet, you can see the amount in the first biennium that goes to the Department of Public Safety is more on the order of $30 million. In the fiscal note on page 127, it says that the annual cost of manually sealing expungements is approximately $874,000, so a little less than $2 million over the course of the biennium out of a $30 million appropriation is going to the expungements, at least based on that data point. And I'm happy to look at that more completely. I don't believe that there is a direct appropriation to local units of government for expungements under the bill.
Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair.
Anything further?
No, ma'am.
Right.
Thank you.
Can't see exactly, so there we go. All right. Were you trying to get on the list, Representative Farr? No.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Okay, Representative Farr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Representative Stevenson, you mentioned the many stops that this bill had, most of which without a fiscal note or a complete fiscal note in it. I'm concerned with still what we have today. So, first question, like page 68 references in the fiscal note now, a blank appropriation to MDH. I just get the hair stands up in the back of my neck when I see a blank appropriation on a fiscal note. So can you explain that one?
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Farr, if you could point me to where in the fiscal note you're looking, I have page 68 in front of me. I will just note there is no blank appropriation in the bill. I might be able to offer more context if you can help me out.
At the bottom of the bill description there in the middle.
Oh.
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Farr, this predates the A90 amendment. That's why it says it's a blank appropriation. So the A90 amendment would include the appropriation to the Department of Health.
Page 15.
Page 15? Thank you. Page 15 of the A90 amendment.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Stevenson.
Representative Farr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I see then, in the, and I'm looking at the fiscal note now, so I may be making the same mistake again, but MMB asserts that the fiscal impact of this bill is really hard to quantify. In here as well, 108, now, and again, I'm looking at the current fiscal note, but the potential cost to government unknown until an evaluation of the impacts of rulemaking is complete. PCA saying that, and so just concerned that we still don't have a solid fiscal note here and don't understand the impacts of the bill entirely. And so I would like to, I'll echo the not ready for primetime concerns.
Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to thank Representative Stevenson and those that came before you for all your work on this bill. 16 committee stops, 9 engrossments show that you were working with folks all along to amend the bill. It is really a thorough look at creating a comprehensive and fair business model, because that's what we're starting as a new business, the state of Minnesota. And I always appreciate it when we Minnesotaize things before something happens at the federal level. And just want to thank you for all the work, and thank nonpartisan staff, because I really lean on your House research summaries, especially for cross-reference to find things in the bill. And you are on your 9th engrossment of the House research summary as well. And all the work that was done in the very comprehensive fiscal note, I have to admit, I only read the section for the Department of Education, because it's kind of a long fiscal note. But I just wanted to go back to touch base on the local control. I sat on a city council for 9 years too, so local control is really important to me as well. And on Article 1, Section 13, it talks about the local control that you have in this bill for cities, just like our other uses around alcohol, that the 1,000 feet prohibition for a business from schools, daycare, public parks, playgrounds. I'm really happy that you wrote athletic fields, because a lot of those are not attached to a school. But also the other attractions regularly used by minors really does say a lot to what the local control can be, to where this can be sold and where it can be used. And the ability to develop model policies, standardized forms, and also to have the interim ordinances, that's important. I have to admit, I was not a fan to start with. I have evolved over time as I've seen the work on this bill evolve over time, and I just want to thank you, and thank you for all the work you've done and others that have done on this bill. So thanks.
Representative Joaquin. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to speak real briefly to the local control issue, and I know it's been talked about by Representatives Nash and Joaquin, but my concern is that if the locals can't raise some revenue from this, that it's going to be taking to the local taxpayers, because the locals are the ones that are going to have to bear the brunt of any fallout from law enforcement and other negative impacts on the community from this. And so all of the state agencies are getting well-fed in this bill. The Department of Health, as it was just pointed out, is getting, where did it go here, $9.6 million in 24 and $18.1 in 25. So all the state agencies, if you look at the bill and the fiscal note and the A90, are being well funded, but the locals are left holding the bag. I want to pivot for a second to the courts. And Representative Stevenson, will the district courts have any role in the whole expungement issue? Will that fall back on the district courts? And what role, if any, would they have in that?
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Scott, in order to complete the process of expungement, a district court needs to seal the records and issue an order.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So Because of that, are there funds allocated to the district courts or to the courts to take care of that?
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Scott, I do see a cost of $1 million on the fiscal tracking sheet. The Supreme Court did submit a fiscal note on this, and they do discuss how they got to that $1 million number on the very last page of the fiscal note.
Representative Scott.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Thanks, Representative Stevenson. And I'm looking at that last page, too, and it one of the questions that the court has, it says it's unclear. This is the first full paragraph of page 147. It is unclear which agency is providing administrative support for the work of the Cannabis Expungement Board. Can you answer that question here in committee, since that was it seemed to be an unanswered question at the time of the fiscal? No.
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Scott, as I am recalling the expungement board, it is consisting of designees for multiple agencies, including a commissioner appointed by the governor, and I believe there's some thought that the commissioner appointed by the governor, it's that agency that might provide some support in getting it up and running, but that it intends to be a sort of a stand-alone entity that is able to do its own work. But I think that we're anticipating that, you know, the whatever commissioner gets appointed to the board might convene it and get it up and running. But there are appropriations in the bill to the board itself.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there someone from House Fiscal Staff that could maybe elaborate on that point in the bill to where that assumption that Representative Stevenson is making is?
I can go to Ms. Adrian's.
Madam Chair and members, I was looking at the fiscal note like Representative Stevenson and the assumptions in there, and I don't know where in the bill that is. Just 1 second.
Representative Scott, did you have any other questions while we look into this, or do you want to?
Sure,
why don't we do that, and we can give folks time to kind of look through and do that while you make further comment. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Stevenson, there are a number of opponents to this bill. The local units of government, the League of Minnesota Cities, Catholic Conference, Chamber of Commerce, the Trucking Association, Smart Approaches to Marijuana, many entities that are opposed to this bill. And what conversations have you had with them to address their concerns?
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Scott, the answer to your question is countless conversations with, I think, every entity you just listed, and that there are many subtle changes that have happened to the bill to try and meet reasonable concerns where they exist. And, you know, we keep talking about the local control. It's worth noting that at the outset of this bill, there was no real contemplated role for local governments in the regulation of the cannabis markets. So we added a licensing provision into the bill that allows local units of government, or requires, cannabis retail businesses to obtain a license from their local unit of government. And then we also added the licensing fees that we discussed earlier to support those operations in order to allow local units of governments to, for example, make sure that the businesses in their locality are selling products that are legal and aren't selling to minors. And so, you know, with any of those groups, there have been extensive conversations and ultimately, in some cases, changes to the bill. I think, as Chair Youakim pointed out, what's before the committee is the 9th engrossment. It'll be the 10th engrossment because you've adopted two amendments today. That actually understates it, because there were many times where we went through a committee and said, I'm not going to take that amendment here, but I'll roll it into my author's amendment in the next committee in order to effectuate how we're doing with nonpartisan staff. So this has been a very open process, a very collaborative process, and a lot of work has been done to get to this point.
Representative Scott. Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, thanks for that explanation, Representative Stevenson. I'm still concerned that, you know, and I'm not always on the same page as the League of Minnesota Cities, but my cities are part of that association. And when they still have concerns with this bill, that gives me concern. And as well as obviously the business community, the trucking association. I mean, that's a pretty obvious safety concern that they share. And I think this bill is just not ready for prime time. We've seen some problems in other states when it comes to public safety issues, and that really gives me the greatest concern about the recreational use of marijuana. And so with that, I guess I would just go back to the original question with partisan staff. If they've got the answer, then I'll be done.
Thank you, Representative Scott. Ms. Adrian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Scott, I don't have a great answer for you. Article 5 is where all the expungement direction and information is. And because it's a new office and a new program, I think that there are some issues that are going to have to be worked out with the expungement board.
Representative
Scott. Well, thank you for that. And Representative Stevenson, I'm hoping that you're taking that into regard. And because if we're going to be burdening the courts in some way, then we need to let them know they were unsure in this fiscal note, you know, of some things, and to the point that this language can be buffed up a little bit better so that they have some assurances and some knowledge of who's going to handle that, the expungements. I think that would be a good thing to get explicitly, you know, explicit language in the bill to ask who's going to take care of the expense and the processes of that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Scott. Further discussion? Lead Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just feel like on this issue, not that I always speak for my caucus, but I want to make sure that I'm clear that I'm speaking for myself here and not for any other members on my side of the aisle. Members, the current law regarding marijuana is a prohibition model, and it's expensive, it's ineffective, and it's unfair. I support regulating it, and that means a lower cost, more effective, and more equitable structure for regulating cannabis. That being said, I do have some concerns about this bill as it is currently designed, and Representative Stevenson, first of all, I want to thank you for your work on this. I don't know, I think you maybe could put a little bit more time into this bill. I don't think you've spent enough time in committee meeting with people. I was saying that sarcastically, Representative Stevenson. There are some letters we've been given, and I'll just highlight there's concerns that are laid out in them. Can you address some of the concerns that have been addressed or ones that there are opportunities? That's the first part of the question. The second part of the question is, those issues that have been raised that can be addressed in a conference committee or future progress on this bill. Again, just the three primary letters talking about are from Plift. The second letter we have here from someone from the University of Minnesota Student Service, and then finally from the Minnesota Industrial Hemp Association. These are all with regards to market design. If you could just highlight some of those concerns that have already been addressed and ones that could possibly be addressed in conference committee.
Representative Stevenson, and you have the letters too. Okay, great, wonderful. Representative Stevenson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, thanks for the question. There has been a lot of conversation about hemp. You know, the legislature took action on hemp-derived edibles last year, and it's created some very popular you know, business opportunities here in the state of Minnesota around edibles and around THC-infused beverages. It's been a boon to, among other groups, our craft breweries and a lot of other small businesses and hemp farmers. And understandably, those groups have a lot of interest and concern about the bill as it's moving forward to make sure that they're able to continue doing what they're doing. And I believe that the bill will allow that to happen and will allow us to have the guardrails that I think that probably most people in the room think are necessary on that hemp-derived space in terms of things like ensuring these products stay out of the hands of minors, ensuring that only legal products are sold in the state of Minnesota. So we did make some big changes to the bill in terms of addressing some of the issues. The biggest one was a concern related to a federal tax provision, 280E, which basically says if any part of your business touches that illegal cannabis, you can't deduct your ordinary business expenses. So if you are a low-dose hemp-derived edible retailer or manufacturer,
if we put you in a license category with adult use cannabis, a federally legal substance, there are pretty profound tax implications. So what we did to accommodate that was create an entirely different license track just for those hemp-derived products. And in doing so, address some of their other concerns. For example, there was a concern that the breweries raised about a requirement to have very segregated facilities between the stuff being used to make the low-dose products and the stuff being used to make other products. That doesn't work in the context of a brewery, for example. So we address that. We also allow substantially more vertical integration in the vertical, I'm sorry, on the hemp derived side. I do think that there's still some concern. I think some of that is based on, frankly, misunderstandings about the bill. I hear repeated concerns about the bill requiring licensure for farming of hemp. It just does not. It does not do that. There's no change to the laws about farming or making industrial hemp. Any of the other non-consumable hemp products, topical solutions, not changed by this bill. What it changes are the products that are consumed, edibles, and only from the point that those edibles are created and sold to the public. So huge portions of the hemp industry are unchanged by this bill, but there persists information out there that it does. I'm always willing to keep listening and keep trying to work on the bill. I think I've demonstrated that as we've moved it through, and I'm hopeful that we can continue to have those conversations. But I think that this is a fair approach to hemp that addresses some of the concerns that people have about guardrails while still allowing this new and, frankly, exciting industry to continue to grow in Minnesota.
Representative Grapple.
Thank you. Madam Chair and Representative Stevenson, thank you for that answer. There's a letter dated April 14th from Clifton here. I'll just highlight one sentence from it where it says, "The current version of the omnibus cannabis bill, however, will cause existing low-potency hemp businesses to shut down on July 1st, 2023. Have you addressed that concern?
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, yes. I do not believe that is true. There's a whole section in the bill about the temporary regulations and registry that would go into effect in between when this bill goes into effect this summer and when licenses for the new licenses are available later, probably next year. So I do not believe that statement is correct.
Representative Graff.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, Representative Stevenson, just to be clear, we're building a market here, right? So whether we like it or not, if we're going to take a black market and create a new regulated market, we're literally going to be creating winners and losers. I don't mean to say that in a disparaging sense. It's just that when you replace a black market with a regulated market, that's what the government does. I want to make sure that I have your assurance that you're looking for a level playing field between not only cannabis but also with hemp, that the coalition goes beyond MN is ready, and that we're looking for something that's going to be working and is effective. I just want your assurances on those three things. I'm voting no on your bill today, but I think I just want your assurances that you'll, as this process goes forward, that you're committed to those three things.
Representative Stevenson.
Well, what, Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, what with your promise of voting no, how can I resist the opportunity to? No, but in all seriousness, yes, absolutely. We want a level and fair playing field. This bill endeavors to do this, endeavors to allow the businesses that are operating in this space to continue to be able to do so successfully and allow people, particularly who have been disadvantaged by the prohibition regime, to enter and prosper in the new industry that we're legalizing.
And Madam Chair and members, I mean, obviously a huge problem with this is that at the federal level, marijuana is still labeled as a Schedule I drug, which is completely mindless and makes no sense whatsoever. And so, Representative Stevenson, you're tasked with the responsibility of trying to set up a regulated market that gets around within the confines of that federal side. And so that's not an easy task, but I want to wish you good luck going forward, and that you continue to engage those existing businesses that have invested real money, real property, and real time into it, and that they're not adversely impacted by this bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. Seeing no further discussion, I will go to Representative Stevenson for final words on your bill, and thanks for all of your work. I know this has been a lot, so appreciate you being here with us today. So, Representative Stevenson, closing words on your bill.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. It's unbelievable to be sitting here in the very last committee stop on House File 100. I appreciate everyone's time and contributions to the bill, and I'd ask for a yes vote today.
So I renew my motion that House File 100, as amended, be placed on the general register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no.
No.
The motion prevails, and House File 100, as amended, has been placed on the general register. Thank you, Representative Stevenson. And with that, members, we don't have any more business today. We will be here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Really appreciate everyone being here and for thoughtful commentary on the fiscal parts of the bills today. And with that, we are adjourned.